Welcome to Canadian Politique. I'm Cameron Bishop.
I'm Leanne Goodman.
And I'm Mike McDougall.
And today on the show, we're talking about the Prime Minister taking on intolerance in Canada. We'll handicap the Ford government's first few weeks in office here in Ontario. And of course, we have to talk about John Brennan, former CIA director under President Obama, has a great career and has a security clearance removed by Donald Trump, but not, they assure us, for political reasons. Anyway, Mike and Leanne, we interrupted Leanne on a Cure marathon, but not Run for the Cure.
No, the Cure, the band.
Okay.
I was listening to the band all morning.
Wow.
Can you sing us one of their songs?
The Cure. No, I will not, but I think I would like to reiterate once again that that band still sounds good. 30 years later, you can play some of those songs, you can play Disintegration, and it still sounds good.
I have a hard time believing that you're even at an age where you can say 30 years later, truly. I mean, I've met you. No, it's true. I can't believe it at any rate. For those that don't know, Leanne just turned 86. Happy birthday. Just kidding. All right. Let's talk racism. So sad day.
What a segue.
From 86 years of age to racism, but consequently, there was a lot of racism going on 86 years ago, but not
still is today.
Yeah, probably more so. And I think it's what Leanne said a couple of weeks ago, and that is, as more and more of these populist politicians get elected, you get these boneheads that feel emboldened. Case in point, this week, it's actually a pretty sad day for Canadians because our media doubled down on trying to excuse a racist woman named Diane Blaine in Quebec, who the Prime Minister called out at a rally after this individual made racist and incendiary comments about migrants crossing the Canadian border and about Indigenous people. The Prime Minister is, I guess I would expect the leader of a nation as diverse as Canada to do, staunchly defends the contributions of immigrants and Indigenous peoples and denounces the woman for what she was, a racist. By way of background, this is also a woman who is a member of what's called the Front Patriotique du Québec, the Patriotic Front of Quebec. And she, in 2015, made headlines for refusing to be served by a Muslim woman at her dentist's office. So naturally, you would expect, and I'm sure we all do, Canadian politicians, especially those in the official opposition, to line up in support of the Prime Minister denouncing this cancer on Canadian society. But we would be wrong. Indeed, a little over a week, after failed CPC leadership candidate Maxime Bernier decried diversity in Canada, Tory talking heads like Senator Linda Frum, who, by the way, was appointed to her job, nobody elected her to anything, and her leader, Andrew Scheer, former failed insurance salesman, derided the Prime Minister for, quote, name-calling and accused him of trying to blunt criticism by distracting Canadians about issues that weren't important to the average person. Of course, this comes after the Conservative Senator Denise Batters, again, another one who fell into her job but did not earn it, as well as Conservative MP Blaine Culkins, derided Liberal MP and Parliamentary Secretary Omar Al-Gabra for being born in Saudi Arabia and suggested he was a full-throated Islamist extremist, or at least a sympathizer. What on earth is going on with the official opposition? Who wants to tackle that? Who wants to tackle that, Rhino?
Yikes.
I just don't understand.
You know, there's a famous Napoleon quote where he says, never interrupt your enemy when he's making a mistake. And I think that, you know, the Liberals should just take a step back and let the Conservative Party of Canada just destroy itself one tweet and one interview at a time. Because, like, this is like, you can't write this stuff on how bad it's been for them. Like, what the hell is going on with the CPC? I'm actually concerned because although I would never vote for them, it is good to have, you know, more than one official party in Canada, because like the NDP aren't doing anything either. And I think that it's good to have checks and balances here, but like, what the hell are they doing?
Yeah, it's this empowering of the base and the fact that people are still coming to the defense of this woman because apparently her performance on a video camera while she's heckling the Prime Minister, this is not an individual. If you listen to what she's saying, she's talking about old root Quebecers or old stump Quebecers, slamming old stock, that old line that we heard from Harper in the 2015 election and the likes of Kelly Leach and Chris Alexander. This is not a woman who was interested in a fulsome policy debate with the prime minister. She wanted to put on a show, and she did. And yet you've got these individuals in the Conservative Party, including their leader and senior spokespeople, out there defending her. I'm very puzzled by this.
Well, how can it possibly be wrong what he did? Like, I don't understand what kind of weirdo you have to be to think that you wouldn't call her out. Like,
it's not wrong.
The media, the way they're framing this right now, and I mean, I know that's a huge brush to paint, but a lot of the headlines are Prime Minister refuses to apologize, doubles down on calling a woman a racist, the host of power.
Right, but that's not necessarily negative. Like, I don't think that's negative. I've seen a lot of media coverage saying, of course he should have called her out. If he didn't call her out, he'd be in trouble for not calling her out. Like, I haven't noticed that the media has been really, unless you're reading Sun and probably the National Post, but I haven't noticed that the media has been so negative about it. I just don't understand, like, what would have been the blowback if he just let her continue? Like, of course you got to say something.
Yeah.
Remember when Jagmeet Singh did it to the woman who came at him?
Yeah, but that was a
staged. And he was lauded for it?
I'm sorry, that one was as staged as his engagement photos. Honestly, I just didn't believe it. And I find him so insincere generally anyway. You know, he's just so lackluster. But yeah, I guess, yeah, he called them out. Whatever.
It kind of reminds me, do you remember during the presidential election when John McCain called that woman out for calling Obama a Muslim?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, that's right? Absolutely,
and there's a,
right.
There's a video of that, and it's, yeah, like, he, it's not as bad. Like, he
Which
didn't
was
call
a great
racist,
moment for him.
It was a great moment, and yeah, it's very similar to that. This is just Andrew Scheer. Like, he's just a bad politician. Like, he's just trying to stir the pot when... And he's trying to deflect from Maxime Bernier as well. I don't know. Like, again, this is theater, and it's hilarious.
Well, and also, they're obviously very transparently trying to cultivate the type of, and I'm sorry, Hillary Clinton was right, deplorables that voted for Trump and who are out there in this country as well. Like, they've laid it bare. We're going after these people. There are people out there who are racist, and we think they might vote for us. And so... we're going to defend the racist, right? Like, it's just so transparent and out there now. It's kind of gross. Like, it used to be that nobody wanted those people. Like, the progressive conservatives didn't want that base. They wanted to be inclusive. They wanted to have a bigger tent, bring in more people. I don't get it. It seems stupid to me because they do well among some groups of immigrants. And so why... why would we now start to embrace racism? Is this really where we are in this country now, too?
I think so.
Can they not think of something different to do? Like, because they saw that Trump has had all this success, they're gonna try to replicate it? Like, we're a different country. We evolved differently than the United States did. So I'm sickened by it.
But, you know, we always pride ourselves on being a different country. But as Leanne, you've said often on this pod, is that we are exactly as racist as the United States. We just hide it better. And we have this superiority complex that we'd like to cloak ourselves in and pretend that there's no problems that are going on up here. When in fact, look at what's going on with indigenous populations. Look at what the commentary that's going on about migrants who are coming into Canada from the opposition that's going on there. I mean, it's, and even recently I saw a tweet, I think it was maybe by Michelle Rempel. I can't remember.
Probably by Michelle Rempel.
Yeah. She's gone completely off the deep end.
Like,
I don't know what the hell happened.
What is going on with her? She's like a complete lunatic right now.
She is. And even yesterday she was trolling the immigration and refugee, the IRCC that does the admissions to Canada for refugees and immigrants. She's sitting there trolling them when they tweeted out something about how migrants crossing into the Canadian border don't do it because you will be arrested and it is illegal to do it. And she said, all she types is "wah ha 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 ha." Like, it's just so coarsening of debate. It's such, you know what Chrétien once called, when he was talking about the Gomerie Commission, small town cheap. Yeah. Why can't we have anybody that isn't small town cheap in Canadian politics? What would it take for us to have people that would stand up with integrity and not fall into this trap?
Well, and that is how we used to be, or that is how we are different from the States, even though, yes, absolutely, we are just as racist, and it exists up here, and we get so smug, but it's here too. But we used to have, even in the Conservative Party, politicians who wouldn't go there, who didn't want to cultivate that base, right? And that's what I'm noticing is changing. Now we're going up. Now we have a conservative movement that is actually trying to get those people, thanks in part to idiots like the idiot that runs rebel media. You know what I mean?
Ezra Levant,
coming
yeah.
here. Yes, yep. I try not to mention his name. So that to me is disturbing. The progressive conservatives, like the party of Brian Mulroney and Kim Campbell, they didn't want these people. And so eventually they wither and die on the vine. Like, if they realize that it's unacceptable to say and think these things, it's an important role for politicians to play. Like, there is a sense of people have to start believing that some of those beliefs are unacceptable in a civilized society. And I thought, in Canada anyway, we were a bit further ahead than the United States on that regard, because they're so into the, you know, they're not into the social contract, and it's all about me, me, me. So I'm a bit disheartened and sickened that they're actually trying to stir up these people.
Yeah. You referenced earlier or I think it was you, Mike, the John McCain defending Barack Obama. You got that clip, and I just want to play it for everybody, because I think it's illustrative of what a politician should do when a woman calls somebody out. In this instance, this woman calls out Barack Obama at a Republican rally in 2008. And basically says he is a Muslim. And John McCain, who was then the Republican presidential nominee, defended him. And I think it has some parallels with what we heard Trudeau do. So let's hear it.
And frankly, we're scared. We're scared of an Obama presidency.
First of all, I want to be president of the United States, and obviously I do not want Senator Obama to be. But I have to tell you, he is a decent person and a person that you do not have to be scared as President of the United States. If I didn't think I wouldn't be one heck of a lot better president, I wouldn't be running, okay? And that's the point. That's the point.
I got to ask you a question. I do not believe in, I can't trust Obama. I have read about him, and he's an Arab. He is not.
No, ma'am. He's a decent family man, citizen that I just happen to have disagreements with on fundamental issues, and that's what this campaign is all about. He's not. Thank you.
He's a Muslim. He's a terrorist.
Yeah, she looks like she just rolled out of bed, too. Her hair looks like Phyllis Diller's in 1960.
I actually covered that debate. Anyway, he's a Muslim and a terrorist.
Yeah, it's pretty disgraceful. Like but the thing is I guess I would hope better from our leaders when we wind up in a situation as we're in right now. Instead, as I said earlier, Andrew Scheer's press release yesterday that came out wasn't condemning the woman. It condemns the prime minister for what he called name calling. Like, are you kidding me?
And also, and I will tell you this, even though John McCain elevated himself and was quite lauded, and that's going to be a moment that ends up in his obituary, because he showed some class and grace and some nonpartisan smarts. That is the thing that turned a big part of the base of the party against him. They started to call him a rhino. Republican in name only, because God forbid he should point out that Obama is not a terrorist. Anyway, so
my question is to you two is, if you are a Canadian who is of a different ethnicity, different religion, whatever the case may be, how do you find comfort sitting in the benches of the official opposition when your leader is barely willing to lift a finger, and you've got people actively defending a woman who is a white supremacist in Quebec, I don't know how you sit there as a member of parliament. Maybe you're Muslim, maybe you're Hindi, whatever the case may be. How do you sit there and allow your leader to do absolutely nothing? And Moreover, how do you sit there and allow not only your leader not to do anything, but tolerate the guy who came in second with 49.5% of the vote, Maxime Bernier, continuing to sit in your caucus? I don't get it. I don't get it. At what point are you so badly compromised, for a job that you sit there with your thumb up your ass and your mouth closed because you're worried about what could happen to you if you speak out? I don't understand how you manage to put your principles at the door.
I think it's something that a lot of politicians do, right? Like, look at the NRA situation. How can you watch a bunch of kids get gunned down and not and still be taking money from the NRA? Like, aren't some things more important to you than a job? But I mean, let's be glad, I guess, that we're not politicians, because I don't think any of us could stomach it, right? You have to wonder, it's going on in Ontario too. Like, I'm hearing that Carolyn Mulroney and Christine Elliott are a bit flabbergasted by some of the things that might be starting to happen there. Okay, we can get into that later, unless I'm segueing, which I really didn't mean to do. But, you know, I guess it's early days, and what do you do? I guess you try to work from within.
Well, let's jump into it, because that is... Leanne is becoming the queen of segues, because this is now just such a lovely dance over to our next topic, which is handicapping.
You should see me ride one.
I know. Nope.
Sorry.
Okay. Anyway, Ontario legislature recessed this week, and it capped the first pause in the newly installed Doug Ford government's attempts to recast Ontario in his image. That image would be bloated with badly fitting shirts. And
a buck of beer
and a face that looks like it's going to blow up. So we've been treated to buck of beer, which is just basically piss water, a new system to retail cannabis in the province, a political blindside by Ford against Toronto, where he cut council in half with nary a consultation. His health minister, Christine Elliott, a progressive, has paused the opening of supervised injection facilities in the midst of an opioid overdose crisis in the search, she says, for evidence that it actually works. And they've also proceeded to take the federal government to court for deigning to impose a carbon tax on Ontarians. 40% of Ontarians voted for the Ontario government, or the Ontario PCs. I know that is not... We don't really have such a thing as popular vote in Canada, but still, is this what the voters who elected Doug Ford should have expected? Mike, you take this one. You're a big Doug Ford fan.
Well, listen, let's go one by one on this. First, buck a beer. It's hilarious. I mean, are we still at one brewery that's decided to do it? And it's the same brewery that Doug Ford, when he was running for premier, filmed his commercial in this brewery. So, like, it's clearly like Doug's drinking buddy, right? That's doing this buck a beer. But what's really interesting, and I don't know if I said this on the pod or if I was saying it to someone offline, but I kind of said, you know, I really hope someone, you know, does a beer where, you know, a buck from every sale goes towards, say, you know, any cause, like school supplies. I think the idea was to call the beer school supplies. So a buck of every sale goes to buy school supplies for underfunded schools. That was just kind of this idea we threw around. Yeah. But there is a company that's doing buck a beer, where a dollar from each beer sale, I believe, is going to help refugees. Is that what it
is? That's right. It's Dominion City here in Ottawa. And that's, it's called Buck a Beer. And a dollar will go from every purchase of that can to resettle refugees in Ottawa.
Yeah,
that's,
I mean,
that's brilliant.
Right? And I know, I just thought the school supplies, call a beer school supplies, and a dollar from each can goes towards buying school supplies for underfunded schools would also be really good. But I mean, you know, the bucket beer thing is just, it's absolutely ridiculous. The retailing cannabis in the province, I think a lot of people are actually for that. He did propose
I like that.
We should privatize it. That's not a bad idea. And I, you know, give credit where credit due. It definitely wasn't his idea. But, you know, I mean, I guess the former hash dealer would know how to sell drugs. So.
Yeah, no, I actually think it probably was his idea. He is a former hash dealer.
He is a professional drug dealer. So,
right.
You know.
More intoxicants for all.
Yep. And then the city council, I know that everyone's tempered when they talk about this because no one wants to be caught arguing for more politicians, but it's bullshit, right? Let Toronto run their own affairs. And it's also in the middle of an election. People are campaigning right now. This is not something that Doug should just throw on as revenge for his brother's when his brother was mayor. And he's also, it's clearly revenge on John Tory, who he got his ass kicked to in the last municipal election. So that's bullshit. And you know what, Doug, now you've done all the things that you don't need, you know, votes in a parliament to do. So now let's see if you get any real work done.
What's ludicrous to me is that he was at the Association of Municipalities of Ontario annual general meeting this past weekend in Ottawa, and he gives a speech and he talks about how Toronto is a unique situation and that Ottawa City Council, which has 24 members, will not face any cuts. And in fact, no other council will face any other cuts. But we're supposed to believe this had no political motivation whatsoever. Okay.
Okay. Sure.
Yeah, sure, Doug. I'm not that drunk on Buck of Beer yet.
Buck of Beer.
So, Leanne, what about you? How about this? Both of you give a grade to Doug Ford's government in the first few weeks. I'm going to say one thing, though, first, and that is about the lack of openings of supervised injection facilities.
Oh, I forgot about that one.
That is absolutely revolting to me. First of all, Christine Elliott, you know, I this is really tough for me to say because I actually really like Christine Elliott. I've met her. She's a wonderful person. She's very intelligent. Don't be stupid, Christine. Minister, get on a plane and fly out to InSight and go and meet with a gentleman there named Dr. Ronald Joe. And what has happened at InSight is nothing short of miraculous. The HIV/AIDS, the new diagnosis, rather, of HIV/AIDS in the downtown east side has dropped by about 90% to 95%. They've had no overdose deaths. There's clean needles. There is, reproductive services, including condoms, what have you. And I just find it really deplorable that what is guiding this conversation about opioid dependence and addiction is ignorance, apathy, and prejudice on the part of this government. And I would expect that Christine Elliott would know a hell of a lot better. These people, when they become these individuals, when they wind up addicted, not one of them, not one. And I used to work for a company that made a treatment for people who were addicted or had opioid use disorder. And it was a great product. It was called Suboxone. That is not a sponsorship plug at all, but it was an office-based treatment.
But maybe they'd like to advertise on our podcast.
Maybe they would like to advertise. But the whole point is that, you know, in all that time, I worked there for 6 years and I met patients. I sat in and I did preceptorships where I would sit in with the doctors and I'd hear the stories of the patients and I'd see them being treated and all of this kind of stuff. And you know what? I have yet to meet one person that ever said to me, you know, God damn it, I took that first hit because I wanted to be a drug addict. You know, who in their right mind would go and make a choice like that so that they go to bed every day trying to figure out where they're going to get their next score and wake up every morning wondering if they're going to get their next score? You lose your house, you lose your family, you lose your job, you lose any sort of decency that people would, you know, give you in society because you become a derelict. That is what happens because we criminalize drug use and drug dependence. Incarceration doesn't work. So I don't know what the hell Christine Elliott is trying to find out when it comes to evidence. The WHO, medical professionals around the world, including addiction specialists, all agree that supervised injection facilities help greatly and reduce the rate of disease transmission and deaths. And yet we're fumbling around for evidence. I just it really pisses me off.
She was married to the man who once proposed jailing the homeless, right? Back in the day.
This is true.
I actually talked to him privately once about his social conservative days, and he said he didn't really believe a lot of that stuff. It's like, well, okay. Back in the Harris years.
But you know, that's the thing. If you don't believe it, then come out against it.
That's what the problem is with politicians. Right? And that's why none of us are in politics. And that's why when somebody who seems decent runs for office, we get excited about it.
Yeah.
Anyway, I give him a D- because really the only thing he's done since he's been in power that I've agreed with is the not restricting cannabis sales to the LCBO, which was stupid. No other province is doing it that way. And, you know, it's here. You can't control it. Get the nanny state out of this people's business. People have a right to get high if they want to get high, and they have a right to buy it the way they can go in and buy a decent wine, right? Like, it's the time is here. So I do really support that. I think that was a smart move. That will help him not just among his base, but among people who aren't terribly sure about him. You know, the people on the fence. But other than that, everything else has been like the cancellation of the basic income. That was stupid. anyway, we already talked about that in a previous podcast, but that was just dumb and mean.
So
the whole attitude that if you're on social assistance, you're some kind of lazy slacker loser. And that's maybe what is involved in the whole safe injection site thing too, that mindset. But okay, we can all get high a lot easier now though. So that will make the next 4 years a little bit easier to bear. We'll just go to our local cannabis store, pick out a vintage package of bud, and smoke our brains out until the 4 years has passed. Thanks, Doug.
There you go. Mike, so D-minus from Leanne, what do you say?
I got to go with F. And the reason why is because, I mean, he's cut funding for schools. He's cut the basic income program. He's cut the injection sites. Yeah, he's going to make it easier to buy pot. But at the end of the day, and I've said this on this pod a lot, everything that he's done is the really easy surface stuff that he has the power to do. The stuff that he doesn't really have the power to do, that he needs to have legislation passed, things like he promised lower gas prices. He also promised lower hydro bills. Notice his statement this week is like, oh, that's going to come, you know, in the fall. Some point, like, we can't do that right now. You know, anything that he actually has to work and be a politician and make a plan for, he's done none of that yet. So he's an F. He hasn't done anything.
Yeah, I agree. F for me as well. And mostly, I mean, across the board, as you say, whether it's buck of beer, whether it's gas prices, he actually said in the legislature about 3 weeks ago, the gas prices were already 10 cents lower. He doesn't know what the hell he's talking about because he admits this week he hasn't done anything. He lies to Ontarians about the shakeup at Hydro One where they lose leadership. He says it doesn't cost a penny. And then we find out it's like $14+ million in severance that had to be paid out to all of the leadership at Hydro One when he canned them. The supervised injection facilities, deplorable actions. And then we've got low life Lisa McLeod, who is his Minister of Social Services, who is also another one ginning up, anti-immigrant sentiment, anti-migrant sentiment, with her comments about the Federal Immigration and Refugees Minister, Ahmed Hussein, and how he was just a big bully to her and doesn't understand the migrant crisis. And then suggesting, we talked earlier about the Prime Minister in Quebec and Lisa McLeod, she is a complete disaster generally, but in this situation as well, she doubles down. I actually have that clip that I want to play because it just kind of goes to the core of the ugliness that we talked about earlier, but also she has no problem spewing it. And here she is responding about the Prime Minister's comments about going after this woman who is obviously a racist.
I think the Prime Minister is being incredibly unfair. I think that the terminology on this illegal border crossing or irregular border crossing is a terminology debate that the Prime Minister would rather have than actually paying for the problem. I think when the Prime Minister, when confronted with some of the problems his government has created, turns around and fearmongers and calls people un-Canadian or racist, really debases the debate that we're having. And it's a very serious one. As somebody who is responsible also for the social assistance programs in the province of Ontario, it worries me that they're not prepared to write the checks and not prepared to fix the problem. But it was his own government today that was tweeting out that it's unlawful to cross at non-ports of entry. Yet he stands here in the city of Ottawa today in our nation's capital, effectively calling people that agree with the Citizenship and Immigration tweet that they're racist. It's unfathomable. I can't understand why he would rather fearmonger than fix the problem.
Yeah, says the biggest fearmonger in Ottawa. Shut up, Lisa. God, she's so hateful in what she says. And by the way, I don't know if she ran like a track meet before that interview, but she sounds like completely winded. I don't know about you, but unless she's starting doing laps while she's doing an interview, I don't know why she's breathing that heavy.
She's excited.
It just makes me so mad. Fear-mongering. It's fear-mongering. Fear-mongering, everybody agrees that the issue of people crossing into Canada as migrants is an issue. And Lisa McLeod, fear-mongering because the Prime Minister refuses to take the bait on calling people illegals and calling people or calling them out for being different. Give me a fucking break. I mean, it's ludicrous. Makes me very angry, as you can tell. And that's why I give them an F-.
F minus.
Lisa McLeod has bumped them down from F to F minus because as long as you keep somebody like that on your front bench, you don't deserve to fail with any element of dignity. And now to a happier topic. So let's talk about what happened this past week in Ontario. We could, but let's not. Let's go south of the border and talk about the goings on in the farce that is the presidency of Donald Trump. So this past week, Donald Trump revoked the security clearance of former CIA director John Brennan, not for political reasons, his White House press secretary Aunt Lydia Sanders assures us, but rather as a result of, quote, Brennan's increasingly erratic commentary. Trump has also apparently mused about revoking the security clearance of former President Barack Obama, former National Security Advisor Susan Rice, and many others. We have a clip, actually, of Brennan responding to the news that he had been stripped of his clearance. So let's listen to that. And then right after, I'm going to back-to-back to the Brennan clip, I'm going to play one of Rudy Giuliani, because I think it also is something that we need to talk about here. So let's hear Brennan first, followed by Giuliani.
You indicated that you've had lawyers contact you about possible legal action. It's 48 hours later. What would that look like? Is that something you're serious about?
Well, I have been contacted by a number of lawyers, and they have already given me their thoughts about the basis for him from doing this in the future. If my clearances and my reputation, as I'm being pulled through the mud now, right, if that's the price we're going to pay to prevent Donald Trump from doing this against other people, to me, it's a small price to pay. So I am going to do whatever I can personally to try to prevent these abuses in the future. And if it means going to court, I will do that.
You believe this is on them, that you would have, that you guys have not delayed the interviewing, delayed the negotiations?
Yeah, yes, each time by 3 or 4 days so we could write a letter in response. They have taken 2 to 3 weeks to get back to us. So what I have to tell you is, look, I'm not going to be rushed into having him testify so that he gets trapped into perjury. And when you tell me that, you know, he should testify because he's going to tell the truth and he shouldn't worry, well, that's so silly, because it's somebody's version of the truth, not the truth. He didn't have a conversation.
Truth is truth. I don't mean to go like.
No, it isn't truth. Truth isn't truth. The president of the United States says, I didn't.
Truth isn't truth. Mr. Mayor, do you realize what
No.
This is going to become a bad meme.
Don't do this to me.
Don't do truth isn't truth
Trump,
to me.
Donald Trump says, I didn't talk about Flynn with Comey. Comey says, you did talk about it. So tell me what the truth is.
Don McGahn might
know. If you're such a genius, Don McGahn doesn't know.
So two issues here. One, let's tackle the security clearance issue with John Brennan and what Trump is doing there. And then let's talk about truth isn't truth in the context of Giuliani not wanting Trump to perjure himself. So first of all, the Brennan issue. Who wants to take it, Leanne?
Well, you know, it's just another example of him being a tiny little thin-skinned baby, and he doesn't like that this guy's always criticizing him publicly, and so he's punishing him. And there's another guy he threatened to punish last night, some other guy that went on CNN, reading the tweet now. Just watched former intelligence official Philip Mudd become totally unglued and weird while debating wonderful Paris Denard over Brennan's security clearance. Denard destroyed him, but Mudd is in no mental condition to have such a clearance. Should be revoked. So he's now actually threatening people on Twitter who also criticize him to take their security clearance away. I'm surprised he hasn't done it to Obama yet. I expect that will happen.
He tweeted today to say he didn't do that.
That he didn't do what?
Yeah. That he didn't threaten to. He said the fake news media or something, you know.
Bullshit.
About,
right. Bullshit. Yeah.
Okay, but as we're reading the tweet now in which he's issuing the threat. So what more is there to say about the fragility of this giant orange baby's ego, right? Like, you're not allowed to criticize him. I edited a piece at the Conversation Canada this week about how the Cambodian prime minister rigged the election. It's unbelievable the what he did. And every single one of those things is something that Trump wishes he could do. He's a lunatic, and this is what the world that we're operating in now at this. And, you know, that's why we've often wondered, maybe even on this podcast, why Obama doesn't say more. Well, you know, it's not out of fear, but why stoke the little man baby's little temper tantrums? Like, why even do it? Like, it's just not worth the hassle. Anyway. He's a lunatic. What more can we say? He's just a horrible, terrible, thin-skinned, crying, squalling orange baby.
I just hope that whoever the next president is, because if we want to talk about national security threats, we have a man who is obviously compromised, including his campaign, by the Russian government, a foreign hostile power to the United States. I hope the next president, be she or he, Republican or Democrat, comes in, and I hope they revoke his security clearance, Mike Pence's security clearance, right across the board, because there is absolutely no reason whatsoever that those individuals should have any sort of insight into national security. Does anybody here actually think? I mean, I remember reading years ago when Bush was in the White House and then with Obama, you know, Bush used to do his daily intelligence briefs, the presidential daily brief at 6:30 in the morning when he was in the Oval. Obama used to do it around 8:30, 9 o'clock. Trump doesn't show up until 11:30, 12. Like, what the hell?
Yeah, is anybody watching Fox News?
He's watching Fox News, and apparently they've basically had to turn it into a coloring book, the PDB, because of the fact he can't follow basic details. Anyway, Mike, any comment from you?
Then there was the other tweet. Sorry, I'll just quickly, Mike. Even James Clapper has admonished John Brennan for having totally gone off the rails. Maybe Clapper is being nice to me so he doesn't lose security.
Yeah.
So now it's, okay, so we have to be nice to him, or there's another threat. So he's, anyway, go on, Mike.
Look, what can be said that hasn't been said? The guy's just threatening to take his ball and go home, right? I mean, the most entertaining, that's probably the wrong word, but what interests me the most about all of this is just how, you know, we talk about like what happened to Michelle Rempel. Like, what the hell has happened to Rudy Giuliani? Like, that guy is hilariously crazy. And like, it's just amazing that A, the president hired him, and B, with a straight face, this guy goes on all the Sunday shows and just Rudy Giuliani's there. Like, really, the downfall of Donald Trump is going to be Rudy Giuliani, and it's hilarious. Like, I can't wait to see the movie when it comes out.
Every time he opens his mouth, he makes it even worse. He incriminates him even further. Like, well, I wouldn't want him to perjure himself. Like,
but Rudy was a legit prosecutor.
Every single time.
Like, yeah,
Rudy,
but he hasn't practiced in 30 years.
Like, yeah, well, I guess, you know, it's like the Cure, man. After 30 years, maybe you got to put it to bed.
Hey, he's up. I can tell you this. I do know, I have heard rumors about Rudy from, like, I happen to have a little Italian connection, and I really can't say what that's about. But I have friends who have friends in the Italian community in New York who, the rumor is that he's got dementia and that he shouldn't be in any public capacity whatsoever. Like, he's completely off the rails.
Well, that's
so
clear.
Good
clear.
Trump.
It's awesome.
You know, though, what shocks me is, remember that, I mean, 9/11, Rudy Giuliani, the mayor then of New York City, was going through downtown Manhattan. Put your mask on. He was an example of leadership in a horrible moment. And this is what he's done with his reputation. Like, this is what he's done with his reputation. Who on earth would, I mean, I don't understand if Rudy's being paid off. I don't understand why he's doing what he's doing. But this is a man who was America's mayor, and now he's the biggest laughingstock going for anybody that isn't in the base of deplorables that got Donald Trump elected. I don't understand how you can fart away that much credibility on this guy.
Well, in fairness, though, prior to 9/11, he was a very despised politician. So 9/11 sort of was a redemption moment for him, where people started to like him again because New Yorkers had really turned on him.
Yep.
And he blew it. So now he's holding Trump's shit bag.
And let's talk quickly too about truth isn't truth. What isn't it truth? What does that even mean? So we're talking about Giuliani in this context of that clip. He was talking about how he's pushed back against the Mueller team and their investigation because he doesn't want Trump to be set up for perjury. Well, how can you be set up for perjury if you're telling the truth? Just tell the fucking truth. But of course, we know he can't, which is why they're so scared. But this whole concept of truth isn't truth from the same administration or their spokespeople who say alternative facts, fake news, I mean, I guess is misspelling is not misspelling. I mean, we're living in an alternate universe. This is just craziness.
Well, I guess what he's trying to say is it's a he said versus he said thing. One person says one thing, the other person says the other thing, so who knows what the truth is, which maybe would have been a more intelligent way to phrase it. I think he tried. But the other thing is Trump keeps changing the truth. Like Trump has said that meeting was about one thing. It was about adoption. He crafted the statement. They were only talking about adoption. And then suddenly, okay, sure, Don Jr. was trying to get dirt on Hillary Clinton. That's what everyone does in campaigns. So Trump keeps changing the truth. So it's not the media or those fake news bullshit that they always throw out that is changing the story. Trump himself keeps changing the story. It's like we're being gaslit on a global...
Well, we are.
Like on a, right? I just feel like we're being gaslit all the time. Like, what is fucking truth? You guys keep lying, saying one thing is the truth, and then it isn't the truth. Then this is a lie, and no, this is what happened. Oh, that's fake news. Oh, this is real news. Like, what the fuck? I feel like I'm going crazy. And I was talking to a friend this weekend about it. Like, I feel like as a people, we need to be doing something. Like, so what? How is this being allowed to continue? I feel like I'm going crazy. I'm always stressed out about it. Anyway. Sorry, I had a little breakdown.
Oh, it's fine. But you know what? You ask what we could do about it. I mean, we're doing something on the pod and people that download it. But I mean, I don't know, because I think we're being gaslit by the official opposition up here in Canada as well. They're using the very cheap and worst tactics of the folks in the alt-right in the United States. And it's the same thing up here. So even Michelle Rempel was pissed off. Michelle Rempel was pissed off this past week because she got fact-checked by Canadian Press. And then she basically said that it was biased because they were calling her out for lying. I mean, I guess truth isn't the truth there, either.
Well, that's the thing. They're following Trump. They're taking so many pages from the Trump playbook where if we repeat a lie enough times, people will start to believe it's true. And it works. That's the thing that is most upsetting to me. And it has to do with the advent of social media and the fact that we only pay attention to the news that confirms our beliefs. But it's so depressing. And yeah, and they're doing it too. What, she lost her shit over a CP baloney meter?
Yes, that's correct. She said it's not the job of the media to fact check. It's their job to be impartial. Okay. Michelle. Mike, you want to take anything on truth isn't truth before we segue over to stories of the week?
You wouldn't believe me if I told you anyways.
Yeah, that's probably true because that's the age we or is it? Or is it? Okay, stories of the week. Mike, you get to go first.
Okay, guys, I have breaking news. Ooh. That's my story of the week. Breaking news. Andrew Scheer is going to go to India to fix the relationship that Trudeau ruined when he went to India. This just broke now.
Wow.
So excuse me if it sounds like I'm reading because I'm really just trying to summarize this. But Andrew Scheer is going to India for 9 days in October to repair and strengthen Canada-India relations. Because the Trudeau tickle trunk diplomacy mission was bad. So Andrew Scheer is going to go fix it.
Oh,
so,
well, thank
hero,
God.
Our hero Andrew Scheer is probably going to get there.
His team
will be like, how did all these Indians get here?
Yeah. I mean, Andrew Scheer is going to be the guy that writes the India-Canada relationship. By the way, who does he represent exactly? Not Canadians. So what do you mean? You're repairing what? I'm sorry. Everybody that I've read, nobody says that it was that there has been a permanent fissure between the Canadian and Indian governments, except for a few hand-wringing pundits. Granted, the tickle trunk diplomacy was not Trudeau's brightest or best hour. But really, who is Andrew Scheer representing when he goes over there? I'm starting to really wonder what the Conservatives are doing to our relations. We have Harper going down and dry humping John Bolton and that other guy, Lawrence Kramer or Krautheimer or whatever the hell his name is, who is the economic czar for the Trump White House. Then we have Scheer going over to London. Suspiciously, one of the men that Scheer met with in the British government is posing for a picture with Stephen Harper after posing for a picture with Andrew Scheer wearing the exact same suit, which makes you wonder if Harper was there when Scheer was there as well. And now we have him farting off to India. I mean, who does he think he is, and what are they doing? What are they really doing behind the scenes? Because we don't get readouts from those meetings. We don't know what they're talking about. And from every indication we've had conservative MPs going down to the United States and refusing to even engage with the Canadian embassy there for support. So who does he represent? What's going on?
Well, we'll find out in October.
It's just all aimed at embarrassing Trudeau, right? They just want to, they treat him like, they only call him Justin. They treat him like he's a lightweight.
And this yeah.
is, now, you know, they, right? That's what it's about.
Yeah, I saw
Harper
that.
Did it for the whole campaign. They just treat him like he's some dumb lightweight.
Well, it's funny you say that because Candace Bergen, one of the most odious individuals I've ever had to pollute my eyes and ears listening to, she tweets the other day something about little Justin. Candace,
yes, they do that all the time.
Yeah, Candace, he happens to be the Prime Minister of Canada. You might know him by his official title, the Right Honorable Justin Trudeau. You also might know him as unofficially the man who kicked your guys' ass to the curb in 2015. And by the way, Candace, that little avatar of you standing in a field of what looks like wheat or mustard seed in Manitoba, wearing a dress. I have family who are farmers in Manitoba, my friend, and not one of them has ever stood in a fucking dress in the middle of a field and tried to posture like you do. Get real. I just wanted to throw that out there. Okay, Leanne, happy over to you.
You know, I don't really have a story of the week. I just want to pay a little bit of a tribute to Aretha Franklin.
Yeah.
Right? A civil rights heroine, a social activist, in addition to being this towering talent. And the world is a dimmer place now that she is gone. I loved her. I'm sure you guys did too. I've been listening to very early Aretha this last few days, like the early 1960s period when they were trying to turn her into like a Billie Holiday-esque torch singer. And you can hear the Queen of Soul voice trying to come out, but they were trying to rein her in. And but the more I read about her, the more I realize what an amazing woman she was. Like, F you, Madonna, for the VMAs last night.
You
made it all about you. Like, ugh. Anyway, Aretha, we love you. You were like just one of the world's best and biggest and brightest talents, and the world is a sadder place without you. Queen, go listen to early Aretha.
The Queen of Soul.
Really good.
And my story is not as heartwarming or as humorous as Andrew Scheer going to India to eat butter chicken and fix our foreign relations.
To eat butter chicken.
Well, and let's face it, that doughy boy, he could pile back a lot. Lots of naan bread,
of
butter
naan.
Chicken. Hope you like it.
I guarantee you he thinks butter chicken's too spicy.
Who needs tandoori? Andrew Scheer, but you're
he
right.
He probably thinks plain yogurt's too spicy.
Yeah, he prefers sour cream. My story happened actually a couple of weeks ago. Did anybody see the story about the goats in New Jersey that get out of this farm? And they figure that I just think this is so funny. There's about 60 goats that escaped from a New Jersey livestock auction house. And the manager of the facility believed that another goat who had bolted a year ago helped them make their getaway.
It's going to be a good Disney Pixar movie.
I mean, I was like, yeah, I'm on Team Goat. That's awesome.
And the footage of them, they were just in everybody's flower gardens just chowing down.
And they're like running all over. And it's all because this little rogue goat comes trotting back. He's like, fucking, we're doing this. You're busting out today. I just think it's so fantastic. So, you know what? Go goats.
I know. And I hadn't realized that you can, like, in many cities now, though, I knew it was going on in D.C. when I was there because there's this terrible invasive vine called kudzu that was taking over everything. But you can now hire a herd of goats to come and clear your land. Like, you just let them loose and they get rid of all the weeds. Like, apparently it's more effective than any other technique. And they just chow down on everything. They don't leave a trace of the weeds that you want to get rid of. Unfortunately, they will eat everything, and they will eat your garden and your hostas and your tulips and everything.
And your
else.
Underwear.
Right. But wouldn't that be great? Just bring out a bunch of goats. They're so nice, goats, too. I like goats.
Well, except this rogue one. He's like Robin Hood. Mm. He just steals back to right the injustices of the goat world. All right, everybody. That's a wrap on this week. We will actually be back next week on the 30th of August. Kind of getting out of our summer schedule here. At any rate, my good friend and a city council candidate for Kanata North, where I call home out here in Ottawa, he is going to be on the pod. His name is Matt Muirhead, and looking forward to chatting with him. And then in 3 weeks, Parliamentary Secretary to the Transport Minister, Karen McCrimmon, also Member of Parliament for Kanata Carleton, will also be in the studio to talk all things politics, negativity in politics, how we improve dialogue, and what it's been like as a rookie MP in this government. So that's it, folks. Hope you all have a great week.
Take care, everyone. See ya.
Ciao. Bye.